Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're about to have a conversation with Rangeena Hamidi. She's founder of Kandahar Treasure. I first met Rangeena, it was a while back, not long after the start of the invasion of Afghanistan, the war in Afghanistan by the United States, going after al-Qaeda, I met her here in Baltimore with her father, who was the mayor of Kandahar, who was assassinated in Kandahar. Ghulam Haider Hamidi, who was her dad. She was born in Afghanistan, fled the Soviet invasion with her family when she was three, returned in 2003 to create this Kandahar treasure, which we'll talk about, and for security reasons is now back in the United States. And the last time she was on the show was about 5 years ago. And Rangeena, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Good to hear your voice, Mark.
You're
glad to be back.
Good, thank you. And how are you doing?
Okay.
Good. Number here is 410-319-8888. Before we jump into the situation in Afghanistan itself and why you left and about where the American involvement is now and what you think about that, give our listeners a sense of what the beginning of Kandahar Treasure was about and why you went back to Afghanistan in the midst of war to a very volatile area around Kandahar, which is your hometown, and what you tried to do, what you did do there.
Well, I have to state to our listeners that Kandahar Treasure actually was born from the Income Generation Project with Afghans for Civil Society.
Yes, that I was on the board of, I should say, for a disclaimer and all honesty, yes.
Yes. So when I did talk to you, five, 6 years ago, yeah. It was when I was working with Afghans for Civil Society. And, even when the project was a project within the nonprofit organization, the idea was always to spin it off into a for-profit company or entity so that the project could become sustainable and not depend on the aid or the funding, for many years. And fortunately, we have created that private enterprise owned and operated by women. And today, now it's our third year, but it's the past 2 years, through 2010 and 2011, we actually made small profits in the company. And they're equally shared among the women and invested back into the company to improve and enhance it. And so as to date, we have about 375 women working with Kandahar Treasure, mostly, again, from home. It's still a home-based initiative. And they're providing the necessities for their families and children and taking care of themselves in the middle of a war. Because remember, even if there is a war going on, people don't stop living, I should take that back. I guess that sounded bad. people still have to live. And so life goes on. And for me, I have this guilt trip of taking or having the option to leave. And I have taken that option right now by leaving Afghanistan and coming to the safe havens of my life in suburban Virginia. But for the millions of people who have no option to leave the country, they have to figure out a way to earn an income and continue living and providing for their families, and that's exactly what the women at Kandahar Treasure are doing right now on their own.
So I know you've been absolutely dedicated to the women of Kandahar and trying to create a new world of business and liberating women through work in Afghanistan and Kandahar. So things must have been really in a very dangerous place for you to decide to leave. So talk about why you left.
Well, things are, it continues to be dangerous. My father was killed in his office on July 27, 2011, last year. Right before his death, we have the, brother of President Karzai being killed and other prominent figures working in government and or tribal leaders or elders in the communities that are constantly targeted as killings. And yet it was interesting because even at that time, even in the beginning of 2011 and late 2010, the U.S. Army constantly would report to the international media or local media that things were actually getting better. And that's the question that I still ask even today is who defines what safety measures we are measuring safety within Afghanistan or security within Afghanistan. Because for me as an individual and for the millions of people who live there and the thousands of women that we knew and worked with, the day-to-day life was a risk on a daily basis. Any day, that we woke up, or the, you know, I then towards the end, the, you know, from 2010 up until the end of 2011 when I left the country, I pretty much moved myself from the house that I used to live in to live in the same compound where the office was, so that I had to, you know, that my travel outside of the, you know, in the city would be limited. So, but again, I had that option to do that. That, you know, thousands and thousands of people who have to come out and work each day don't have that option. So every day that they come out of their home, they say goodbye to their families, knowing that that could be their last goodbye. And so to live in that level of insecurity, and then you add on top of that this complete lack of vision, both by the Karzai government towards its people, as well as the international community that continues to be present in Afghanistan, you can only imagine what life really and can mean to the, you know, 34 or so million people that are living in Afghanistan today.
So I just quickly, were you, when your father was assassinated, were you in Kandahar when that happened?
Yes, yes, I was there, and we actually, my father and I played almost like a tag game with each other for you know, almost 2 years before he died, which was that he was afraid for me and I was afraid for him. Mm. And we kind of both would tease each other saying, if you go, I'll go, and, you know, vice versa. But I guess he's not here today to speak from him or to hear from him what he has to say. But from my personal perspective, I did not, luckily to this day, I don't have any personal threats directly pointed at me. You know, I didn't have any threat letters, any threat calls, because what I'm doing and what the women have been doing is we didn't choose sides to be either with the government or the international community. All we're doing is business, meaning we're working to bring some money to the hands of women so that their children can be fed and taken care of, basically. And so it's, you know, even by elements such as the Taliban or extremely conservative groups that are present on the ground, they don't see that as a threat, honestly. But I always felt that I was a soft target for my father. So if they could not get to my father, my fear was that they could get to him through me. But when they finally, you know, killed him, I did not feel, again, I did not have the personal security issue, threat anymore. But things were just so chaotic on the ground. I had become so delusional. I lost my faith in the government, in the international community. I've become skeptical, and I just made a personal decision to leave, because I honestly don't think I was a positive force on the ground there anymore. But I was able to do this because I'm proud to say that I created a business entity, a private enterprise, which is able to run on its own. So it doesn't necessarily need me to be on the ground to help it. And that is exactly why I pushed from the beginning to invest my time and energy in creating a private enterprise, because a private enterprise is able to stand on its own feet, whereas nonprofit organizations must always depend on funds and aid. And if you don't have somebody constantly reporting and recruiting monies, you cannot make the organization sustainable.
We're speaking with Rangina Hamidi, who was one of the founder of Kandahar Treasure when it started with the Afghans for Civil Society, an organization of Afghans and Americans out of Baltimore here, that I was on the board of. She was born in Afghanistan. Their family fled in 2003. She returned in 2003. Rangina, it's interesting, though, that you have, years back and even now, given the security situation, have called for American troops to leave Afghanistan. Talk about that.
Well, I was interviewed by Democracy Now! In 2009.
Yes.
And that was in Kandahar. And I said that the troops should leave, and this was at the time of the surge, because really, I was pretty much confined to the city. After about 2007, I no longer was able to travel to the districts on my own, or even on top of wearing a burqa or going with locals, it was simply too dangerous to do so. So the reason I said at that time for troops to leave is because I did not see the importance of increasing the number of troops, because things didn't change for me and the, you know, people that I knew in the city. In fact, it was the contrary. The security started getting worse and worse. And even today, you know, after this incident of 16 innocent, mostly women and children, being killed, we're going to leave behind the reason of why it happened and who did it and what state of mind. Regardless of the reason, this is something that is uncalled for, and it's unfortunately one more big blow to the relationship between Afghanistan and America. And so my statement is to American decision makers is that if you can change your policy to enhance your work on the field in Afghanistan in terms of bringing better security, you know, in terms of helping or tackling the Afghan government to be a little less corrupt than it is, then be there, and you know, I'm happy to say that I'll support you there. But if that is not happening, and after 10 or 11 years of time, things have only gotten worse day by day, then I don't see why we're wasting millions of dollars, lives, both on the Afghan side as well as the American side. And you know, it's becoming a very unpopular war that no one is anymore supporting. So unless there is a hidden political agenda, which I'm sure there is, which is obviously not discussed on televisions or radios or on the media, I don't see a reason for continuing this war with the problems that it faces on a daily basis on both sides.
So I wonder, living in Kandahar, which was kind of the folks, by the lines are open at 410-319-8888, as we talked with Brangina Hamidi, who is now back from Afghanistan, where she was running Kandahar Treasure in Kandahar. And Kandahar being one of the focal points of this war in many ways, and where America's put a lot of troops, and you're saying that it's only gotten worse day by day, as you put it, which is very different from the reports that you hear on the news often. Mm-hmm. Tell me why you think that is. I mean, and what do you think? I mean, so, you know, we've had programs in here. We've talked about the idea that much like the British in the 19th century or the Russians went back, 20 years ago when they were in Afghanistan, both could not get through and could not deal with fighting Afghanistan and had to flee. I mean, what is it? Why is it that the Americans are incapable of creating the kind of peace and that they think they can create?
You know, I don't think that America is incapable of creating peace and security and stability in that country or in that region. I don't think that there's the political willpower to do so. And that's what hurts me. You know, I was on the ground, and I will just, you know, briefly say the story of how my father was killed, where it's supposedly a guy was confiscated by the, you know, Afghan regime right now, and I don't even know honestly where the guy who was confiscated in the murder of my father, whether, you know, a sentence has been announced to him or not. For all I know, he might very well be walking the streets of Kandahar again and killing other people, you know, because the corruption within the regime is that much, where there's absolutely no faith in bringing justice to the ordinary citizens. But the guy who was caught claimed that the suicide bomber who came to kill my father was picked up from the border of Afghanistan-Pakistan and driven to the municipality where he was directed to go and kill the mayor, and in which he succeeded. And I say this story to reiterate and restate that unless and until America deals, or the international community, doesn't even have to be just America, deals with the you know, the biggest fact in this ugly game, that Pakistan is the source of terrorism, is the source for creating new terrorists, not only for Afghanistan but for all of the world, we're not going to end this war either in Afghanistan or in the world. And when I said that there's no political willpower, that is exactly what I mean, is that, you know, 11 years or 12 years almost into Afghanistan, constant bombardment of villages, of raids, night raids, and homes of people, and, you know, America being the world power still is unable to figure out what the problem is. I mean, that it is so hard and almost, you know, it's almost ridiculous to believe that America isn't capable. I think America knows, And now that the heart of the problem is Pakistan, but I think America does not know or hasn't decided yet how to deal with Pakistan. And unfortunately, until we deal with Pakistan and its, you know, multi-faced policies for both Afghanistan and the world and America, we're going to continue to be in this mess, and we're going to continue to be unfortunately affected by terrorists throughout the world. You know, we can go ahead and kill many innocent Afghans in Afghanistan and also cost life on the American troops and waste $1 billion. But until we hit Pakistan, this problem and this war is not going to end.
And that's difficult to deal with as well, because how do you deal with Pakistan, which is a huge country and a country that is very complex? It's not as easy to address.
But is Afghanistan easy to address?
Absolutely not.
I mean, come on.
So, I mean, a lot of argument is made that if Americans leave Afghanistan, people who would say they should stay would argue that the condition of women in Afghanistan would deteriorate and the Taliban would once again take over the government of Afghanistan.
Yes, of course. And we've been used and abused by all powers all the time. I don't know what is so... But I guess women are special enough, obviously, for every regime to use them. You know, I have to admit that living in Kandahar for the past 9 years, from 2003 until 2011, I had women tell me with their own tongues, you know, with their own, it was their own speech. I'm not trying to rephrase them here, that some of them actually preferred living under the Taliban in spite of the conditions that the Taliban imposed on women, simply because they knew that they or their loved ones were not targeted for no reason on a daily basis. You know, let's not exclude women from the rest of the society, that women are this autonomous body of individuals that are not affected by what is happening to the men in that country. You know, it is a patriarchal society. Men are still very much in control. No matter how much we try to think that America brought democracy and freedom and liberty to the women of Afghanistan, it has not divorced them from relationships, from customs, from culture that has, you know, controlled the region for thousands and thousands of years. So when we kill them, or when the men are killed, or the men are bombarded, or, you know, the men of these women are handicapped because their hand or their foot or their eyes were blown out in a suicide attack nearby, it also affects women on that level, because, you know, Afghanistan has not come out of the dark ages, if I may call it that, in the past 10 years. And so women choosing to prefer life under the Taliban than this current regime with America and 42 different other nations present in their country is, you know, is something that needs to be at least listened to, if not taken into consideration. I think we need to at least listen to why that is. And so women that I know are willing to give up their so-called liberties that they've gained in the past 10 years for the sake of safety and security. I think it's a perspective. I think for women in Kabul or some other bigger cities where customs and traditions and, you know, cultural norms are not so tight on women, of course they agree with media and journalists who are saying that the leaving of troops will affect them negatively. But if you go to the majority of the country and places like the South, women honestly don't have, they would prefer just to be in peace. They don't care which regime comes. They just want to be able to live and have their loved ones live.
That's a pretty powerful, that's a pretty powerful thought, what you just said, which is something we don't hear a great deal. I mean, people who, men or women, who don't necessarily want to live under Taliban rule are willing to do that just to end the madness.
Exactly. And I have had men say that, and I've had women say it. It's interesting. It's interesting because this is something that I cannot paint a picture, because I don't have pictures really. But just by simple words, when I went in 2003, I saw the slow transformation of young men, especially those in school, the teachers and whatnot, who were working with the government. They were more and more tending to wear pants and shirts and ties to look a bit more modern and a bit more Western, and that was the mandate of the government. But towards the end, you know, by 2011, when I left, It was close to impossible to find someone wearing pants and shirt, and this is men, out in the city. Even school children who were coming and, you know, going to schools in the very outskirts of the city, they were told not to wear pants and shirts anymore to prevent them from becoming targets.
Hmm.
So they're going in their local attire. The beards are grown again. The turban is back in high officials, like UN offices you would go, or other international organizations. You have young men growing beards again, wearing turbans again. And this is only, these are only signs of, my assessment of it, is to prepare for what might come next, that they're only preparing if a regime like the Taliban might come back to power. They do not want to be the immediate first targets by looking different than the rest of the society. So that's really what has happened in the past 11 years. And it's almost a surprise, because you would think that should not, with so much troop presence and American presence. But the reality is something very different than what the media has painted, unfortunately.
I mean, even saw, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I mean, saw that the tragedy that took place to the family that was killed by the American soldier or soldiers. We don't know exactly how it happened yet, but that they actually moved close to the base to be safe from the Taliban. But
exactly,
they were not safe.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's what, you know, I had an old woman once in my office who was visiting to collect work to take to her family members, and a journalist happened to be visiting us at the same time. And the woman, I think, was either from Arghandab or Dun District, which is it's outside of the city. And they asked about what she felt about the Taliban or the, you know, the troops' presence, and her response was very simple and very honest. And she said, during the day, we're afraid of the Taliban, that they'll come and kill us. During the night, we're afraid of the Americans, because they'll come and bombard us. So it's our fault for being who we are, because we have no friends. We're the enemy of everybody. And, you know, you listen to that, and especially with this family, that's exactly what has happened. They were afraid of the Taliban. They moved close to the base, and unfortunately, it was the base that turned against them.
Well, you know, it's always a pleasure. I mean, it's a very tense and important conversation we just had, a reality check. I appreciate, Rangina Hamidi, your talking with us and also the work you've been doing in Afghanistan. And we'll stay in touch and keep talking, and I look forward to having you more on the air with us to talk about what you hear is going on and what we need to do. So thank you so much for all the work you do and for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Rangina Hamidi, founder of Kandahar Treasure. As we look at Afghanistan through the eyes of an Afghan woman who has lived here and in Afghanistan and was doing remarkable work there. We're going to take a very brief break. Excuse me. And when we come back from this break, we'll be joined by Rebecca Walker, of course, is the daughter of Alice Walker, her new book is Black Cool, 1,000 Streams of Blackness. Stay with us and don't go away.